How does a West African child soldier, literally stripped of his voice, still find a way to tell his story? Through the skillful pen of Chris Abani. In his latest novella, Song for Night, the award-winning writer tells the story of My Luck, a boy forced to fight in a nameless civil war. Soldiers have cut out My Luck's vocal cords and made him detect mines. One blows up in the boy's face, and the novella begins as he regains consciousness.
Grandfather said, one should never stop searching for the thing we desire most. And the thing I desire most right now is finding my unit. We were all together when one of us, Nebuchadnezzar, I think it was, stepped on a mine. We all ducked when we heard it arming, that ominous clicking that sounds like the mechanism of a child's toy. The rule of thumb is that if you hear the explosion, you survive the blast, like lightning and thunder. I heard the click and I heard the explosion, even though I was lifted into the air, but the aftershock can do that, drop you a few feet from where you began. When I came to, everyone was gone.
As My Luck searches for his lost platoon, Abani treks through the horror and even the hope of a child soldier's life that's been shredded by war. Here with me now to talk about Song for Night and some of his other projects is Chris Abani. Chris, welcome.
Thank you, Farai. Thank you.
So your novella begins with the sentence, "What you hear is not my voice." This boy, My Luck, is talking to the reader, even though he can't speak.
Right.
Tell us a little bit more about how you chose that framework and what it does to him telling his story.
A lot of my work has always been trying to give voice in a way to people who don't always have a chance to speak. So I thought, why not start with the conundrum where someone can tell the story directly but doesn't have a voice? And so it does two things to the reader. One is that it actually makes the reader suspend the fact that they're being told a story, and they begin to, because they know this child can't speak, it suddenly becomes the reader's voice.
It's a literal journey for this boy, this character of yours, as he searches for his platoon. And there have been, you keep using the word darkness. I think of
right.
Heart of Darkness
right.
and the films it's inspired. By sending him on a literal journey,
right.
What were you trying to show about this kind of a conflict and also about the role of children in...
Right. In this kinds of conflicts?
Yeah.
Instead of trying to imagine what this could be for the boy, I decided to set him on a journey that as a writer I would have to go with him on. And if I got lost in this journey, then he would have to get lost. And so it speaks more about the humanity of the writer and the readers, in a sense, trying to implicate them in this literal journey.
Your book draws on the wrenching fact that children are used as soldiers
yes.
Throughout many different conflicts in the world, and also that rape is a tool of war. And you have a situation in the book where My Luck is asked to rape someone, and there is also a relationship with a woman, Ijoma, that provides an interesting lens on his experience with rape. Tell us a little bit about why you chose to write that, what the scenario was, and because this is a book that lives in the world of boys and men, how women get involved in that world.
Wow.
Okay, that's a lot. I acknowledge that was about a 5-part question. Just start with whatever you can.
I would try to do my best. So one of the things that is actually most shocking about war up till today is the fact that rape is accepted as a means, as a weapon in war. And part of, I think, one of my projects is to expose the sometimes immoral ways in which men are raised to be men. Men are raised to be men often through violence, and often through violence either directly or figuratively over women's bodies. And that's part of a big issue. And so in one of the situations, the platoon leader, John Wayne, has put a gun to Myluck's head and has forced him to rape this woman. Now, the woman who's being raped, and she knows that if he doesn't do it, he'll be shot. So here's this woman being raped by a 14-year-old boy, but she's forgiven him. In fact, she's surrendering to him because it seems important to her that he live, and that he live knowing that she forgave him. So in a sense, the moments when in the book where women choose to act, their acts are always of love. And thinking about it now, I wonder why that is, whether I, as a man too, are trying to work out my own darkness, in a sense.
When you think about the loop of what we call reality and what we call fiction. Clearly, you've been influenced by what's going on in the world today.
Right.
Do you have any hopes or fears that your fiction will then in turn influence the dialogue that we have in the world about issues like rape, issues like warfare, issues like child soldiers?
I do live with a sincere hope that my own humanity is naked on the page and that the people who read my books are able to connect with their humanity and that things will become a little more complicated and decisions will become harder for another generation of people.
Another ripple of influence you have is that now you have an imprint
right.
on Akashic Books
yes.
that has poets on it.
Yes.
How did the genesis of that come about? Why'd you decide to do that?
Well, I've been teaching in a lot of creative writing programs. And what I began to notice after a while was that women were expected to make work that deals with the domestic. And so women in those workshops who would write highly complex, intellectual, sometimes inaccessible poetry would have no one would have a way to read it. But if men did the same, people would find ways to read it because it's assumed men can do this. And I would be the only one sort of trying to explain this work in class, and I thought, well, I need to sort of start finding a way to shift my activism from rhetoric to actually doing things that make a difference. And so I approached first Red Hen and then subsequently Akashic, and I said, look, I would love to set up an imprint that actually provides access for unpublished poets, particularly women, particularly African-American women, to have access to publish books within the scope of publishing that they might not necessarily be allowed to.
You are always coming up with something else. What do you have coming ahead of your own works?
Well, I'm working on a long book-length poem called Sanctificum that's almost done. It's one of the most startling books I've ever written because it's sort of an epic of self that is also not just the autobiography of myself and my body and my family, but I think even of nation. And I'm working on an anthology for Akashic in their famous noir series. And this one is called Lagos Noir. So it sort of puts Lagos back into the capital limelight of crime, but in a creative way. And I'm working on a novel set in Las Vegas called Fire and His Brother. And it's about Nigerian circus freaks.
Well, can't top that. Chris Abani, thanks so much.
Thank you, Farai. Thank you.
Chris Abani's latest book is Song for Night, and his imprint on Akashic is Black Goat.